Welcome to Our Story, the podcast. Every month, Pastor Mark from Harmony Toluca Lake sits down with a guest to discuss their journey of faith from an inclusive, affirming point of view. These personal stories are part of a colorful tapestry of individual life experiences that transcend the boundaries of church by connecting us all together, collectively, through faith, hope, and love. This is Our Story.
Hey everyone, Pastor Mark here with Harmony Toluca Lake, the second campus of Hollywood United Methodist Church, and welcome to the latest Our Story, the podcast episode. And today I have the great pleasure of introducing and connecting with Jolly Gosnold from London, England. Hello, Jolly.
Hello, Mark. It's good to see you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to see you too. So I'm going to give everyone a little bit of background because Jolly, he's connected with St. Martin in the Fields, and it is an iconic church. It is part of the Church of England, Anglican, and it's located on the northeast corner of Trafalgar Square in London. It is well known for its religious and social engagement with the church's origins. They date back all the way to the medieval period, but in the current building in which they worship and have activities, that goes back into 1726. St. Martin in the Fields is known for its inclusive approach, offering services for a diverse congregation, and it also supports the homeless and vulnerable, operating a number of programs and partnerships in which Jolly and I will talk about here a little bit later. Plus, it hosts regular musical concerts, outstanding concerts, along a wide range, and also public events. So how did Jolly and I meet? What is this connection? Well, in January of this year, 2024, I attended a lunchtime prayer service that was led by the pastoral assistant of the church, Jolly. And so I decided afterwards, I was hungry, and the church, which I've been in before, they have something that's called the Crypt Cafe. And so I went downstairs and I saw Jolly, and that's when I asked him, I said, are you okay if I sit down and talk? And so we did. We conversed for about an hour. It went by very quickly. We had a great time, and I found Jolly to be an absolutely fascinating individual. And now our paths cross again for this podcast with Jolly in London and with me here in Los Angeles. So, Jolly, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Honestly, you know, it was so... it was such a blessing to meet you back in London back in January. You know, that moment of you stopping and saying, can I sit down and can we chat? You know, who would know that we would end up connecting so well, so quickly, so deeply? I really appreciated it, and I really it was very affirming for me that I'm, you know, was exploring my vocation and sense of calling, and actually coming away from that conversation, it was great. We had a lot of synergy, and I really appreciated your encouragement. So thank you for having me on.
There's creativity between us. We know that from our creative backgrounds, but also just so everyone understands that Jolly in that time frame has now just made a huge shift in your life to now saying, yes, I want to be an ordained priest. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation here. So I'm going to start off with an easy question, and then this is about your story. So okay. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
If you could, this is a tough one. If you could only eat at one restaurant for the rest of your life, which one would it be?
Oh, what a brilliant question. okay, so I spend a lot of time in Italy. And I love Italy. I used to work there quite a lot, so I spend 2 or 3 months there a year. I'm killing the time a little bit because now I'm going to try and choose the Italian restaurant. I'm going to go. I don't know if you've ever been to Sicily, Mark. Off the coast of Italy. The boot of Italy sticking into the water. A beautiful island. And there is there's so many different places in there, but I would go for it in a town called Cefalù. There's a great restaurant called La Brace, which I've had a number of great meals at. I just love that location. I love that place. And yeah, I'd go back there in a heartbeat.
All right. Well, when I go to Sicily now, I know exactly where to go. I love it. All right. So I'm privy to, but now I would love for you to share with the listeners about your personal faith journey. What led you to become a pastoral assistant at St. Martin in the Fields? And I know this is going to be it's going to be a long story, but
yes,
just share it because it's fascinating. I love it.
Well, thank you, Mark. It is a long story, so do feel free to interrupt me if I'm going on too long. It's been about a 10-year journey, I'd say, to where I am today. You know, I moved to London for university to go to drama school when I was 19 years old. And I was trying to embrace everything the city had to offer. I threw myself into it. It's an incredible creative place. You know, anyone who's been to London will know that. It's a place of parties, of music, of dance, of drama, of people working very hard and playing very hard. And I really threw myself into that. But also quite quickly found myself a bit lost and feeling like I didn't really have any community. And having grown up in a very rural part of North Yorkshire, in the north of England, it was a culture shock. And actually, I had a lot of people around me, but I'd never felt so alone at the same time. But I had connected with a young woman. We started dating. She was from Canada. And she was living in London at university as well. And after a few months of dating, she came out to me as a Christian. it had been, she didn't talk about it really at the beginning of our relationship. And I think she was going through her rebellious phase where she was trying to find her own way and say, I'm not going to do my life the way my parents, you know, intended. But then after a few months, you know, her face was clearly very important to her. Mm-hmm. And, we kind of got to a stage where she said, you know, you're going to have to be a Christian or I can't be with you. You know, she was getting advice from her pastors at the time, back in Canada saying, you know, he may be a nice guy. And if he's not a Christian, then you know, he's not for you. And she, you know, was taking that very seriously. Now, if I'm pastoring her now, I have something slightly different to say. You know, that's what she was told. And I have to respect that. But it is. It blew up. We had a big argument in Paris, no less. It was all very young and romantic. I've taken her away to Paris over Easter. Me not really realizing that that might be a significant time in the Christian calendar. And I'd taken her away. Her parents were very upset that I'd taken her away, that we might be sharing a bed together and sharing time together in a different country, no less. And it came to a head there. And she said, look, you know, this is actually really important for me. And I said, look, I can't just be a Christian. No matter how much I like it, I want to finally decide I'm a Christian. I don't believe in it, you know. But I did have enough patience and I was able to put my ego to one side enough to say, okay, look, I don't understand it, but I will, if it's important to you, then I want to at least understand why it's important to you. You know, I want to know why your faith matters. And so she invited me along to church. We got back to London. First thing we did was Sunday. The day after we got back, she said, okay, I'm going to take you to church. And she thought, yeah, you work in theatre, you're studying theatre, you love performance. If I'm going to convince, basically, I think she's thinking, if I'm going to convince you to stick around in a church, I'm going to have to take you to one that's pretty exciting. And she took me along to the London, Central London campus of the Hillsong Church.
Oh, boy.
And they met in a West End theatre on a weekly basis. And she took me into this Hillsong Church, which, you know, I would assume your listeners know who they are. Big evangelical Pentecostal, very, I don't mean how can I describe it, very large sort of mega church that comes out of Australia and has campuses all over the world. And I was extremely overwhelmed. You know, so far, you know, the only understanding of church I knew or had was a very specifically kind of Church of England, Rome, Mel's, him, yes. People falling asleep, and they might be the people that were preaching, never mind the people being preached to. That's how I imagined church. So it was something completely different, and I found it very overwhelming. But what did happen there very quickly, and I was surprised by, was people took the time to say hello, to ask me questions about myself, to want to get to know me. And suddenly this death that I was having of my life in London, of feeling like I didn't really have a community, I felt very alone, was being filled by these people that called themselves Christians, these people that said they loved Jesus. And that was attractive. And also I cared about my girlfriend at the time, but I stepped around and I carried on going to church, and there were things that I disagreed with, you know, immediately. There were things I was uncomfortable with, the wealth and how that wealth would be used. I was uncomfortable with the kind of spiritualizing of one's giving and donating to the church, but kind of was very, that was equating kind of how much you give to how much God will bless you, and this kind of, as if it's a kind of math thing that's going on there that I was immediately uncomfortable with. And, you know, the church's implicit homophobia, misogyny.
Yes.
You know, the only people that were on the platform, as they would call it, would be white, mostly white, straight, married men, and maybe their wives, you know, and
maybe,
that was the model.
Yes, maybe.
Maybe their wives, yeah. If you were single, you were disabled. If you were, you know, anything other than what is seen as cool. It's not explicit, but it was clear that it wasn't your face. Now, obviously, I'm saying that as somebody who is white, straight, and male, wasn't married, but, you know, I had a girlfriend, and, you know, I'm doing everything that was meant to be. But even I was starting to feel a little bit on the outside of things, partly because maybe I had different opinions. And over time, you know, I started to realize that this church didn't, to me, seem to be reflecting the God I have come to know in Christ. Because I found Jesus as a character, as a person, as an embodiment of God on earth. Radical, inclusive, loving, challenging, exciting, gentle, and poor. And that was the opposite of what I was experiencing in the church. And so, whilst I've still got, you know, so many friends in that space, people I love and care about, and I was there for about 5 years, you know, and I got to use my skills, I directed plays and films for the church, and they were performed in, you know, arenas for 10,000 people and streamed all over the world. And I got to pour out and give my gift to the ministry and mission of the church. In so many ways, it should have been the right place for me, but eventually it wasn't. And I was seeking a more inclusive, more explicitly inclusive space where there is no norm that you have to differ from, where there is no kind of set way. You know, it felt like there was a lot of certainty in that space, and I was seeking something where the mystery of God could be embraced and enjoyed. And eventually I found my way out of Hillsong and into the Church of England, where I feel like I've been able to explore that.
How did it lead you to St. Martin in the Fields?
Okay, so good question. So I came to St. Martin in the Fields via a small church in an area of East London called Hackney, called St. Paul's West Hackney, which is an amazing place that was round the corner from my house. And I found it because we have a thing in the UK called the Inclusive Church Network, which are a number of churches of all denominations that are basically signing up to say, you're welcome here. You know, we do not discriminate based on your sex, your gender identity, your sexuality, your disability, your wealth, your status, any of that, you know. You are welcome and loved. We affirm you. Your gifts are, you know, of God. Your life is God-given, and who you are is God-given. And there's an amazing network of churches across the UK that are committing to being these open and welcoming spaces. And I knew I wanted to find that when I was moving church. I needed an inclusive church. And I happened to find the one that was nearest me, that flew a pride flag above it all year round, where one of the priests was a gay man in a civil partnership with his husband. And when I came to communion and stood around the altar and we shared in the body and the blood of Christ, I noticed that we were the shattered pieces of the broken body of Christ. All diverse, all beautiful, all with our own edges and sharpness and smoothness, our color. There is a full diversity, and we came around that table together and we were all welcome, because it was not the church's table to say whether they were welcome or not, whether we were welcome. They were first table. And God said, Christ invited us to meet in there. And my experiences in this church led me to feel like I wanted to hold that space with people. It felt so powerful, that opportunity to know that I was loved and seen and held by God. I felt called to hold that space for others, and I started to speak to my priest there, an incredible man, Niall Weir, who's actually just retired this weekend when we're recording. Incredible man, incredible ministry, who's built up, what an amazing space of welcome and love and community. I spoke to him and I started to say, look, I think I might be meant to be like a priest like you. Is that weird? And he sort of, you know, just quietly sort of nodded and just looked at me and said, okay, well, you know, let's talk. And so over a year, we started talking about it more. He gave me things to read and kind of stress in to see whether I was still facing this. And I was going back and forward, going, do I want to be... I was working in the theatre at this time, the director and writer in London. I think, do I want to be a priest? Do I want to give all this up? I'm having quite a successful career. Do I really want this? But I carried on having the conversations, carried on showing up, carried on being present and learning and listening and growing. And that kind of culminated in eventually feeling like I need to actually really test this by doing it on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I discovered St. Martin in the Fields, although I kind of knew it, I'd be fair. It's quite a well-known church in the UK and across, you know, across the world, actually. I knew of it, but I encountered the work that was being done here through a book called The City of My Monastery, which I really recommend any of your listeners to have a read, particularly if you are living in the city and seeking a way of life, a spiritual way of life that helps ground you in your faith. It's written by Reverend Richard Carter, who is the Associate Vicar for Mission at St. Martin's Gate. And now, if I'm very, I say, my boss, my colleagues, and my friend. And I've read this book. It's just incredible. It sort of speak about the Nazareth community. I'm wearing this cross here now, which is our symbol of the Nazareth community, which is a contemporary sort of semi-monastic community, gathered community scattered across London and across the world now, of people committing to living a simple rule of life, of where we're committing to living lives of silence, of study of scripture, of taking part in the sacraments of the church, of taking Sabbath time to rest, of sharing with one another, of offering service to the vulnerable and the marginalized, and of staying with one another in community together. And I saw this community was written about in this book, and I thought I need to be a part of that. And I went on the website, and it just so happened that they were looking for a pastoral assistant, someone who was exploring their vocation, who perhaps wanted to be part of this contemplative community, who had creativity and gifts that they could offer in that sense. And I thought, this is me. This is my place. And this is where I need to be. And I met Richard, who also happened to be a former theatre director and writer. And there was, again, we had a lot in common. And I just knew as soon as I came into my interview that this is where God is calling me to be. And I'm gonna let go of the theatre for a year. And I'm going to plant some roots down in this place. And I'm going to see tests of calling. Yeah, have my sense of understanding of what I'm hearing, this call to be a priest. I'm going to go find out whether that's real. And I've been here now since September. And it's weird. God is calling me here, and God is calling me to the priesthood. And that has been such an incredible revelation of God's love and grace.
Yes. And look how Spirit has worked in your life going back those years. And how it has led you now to this moment. It's a beautiful story, and I'm so glad that you're sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, how is your family taking this news now?
Well, my family are great. They're a loving bunch of people. I'm not from a religious family, a family of faith, although my mom has she was raised as a Christian, and I think she maybe went away from it and rediscovered her faith and her practice in her adult life after I became a Christian. I think it's something we were able to bond over. So I shared it with her, and she's very excited to meet and looking forward to it. I think maybe some of my siblings, they're a bit more confused, and some of my friends are maybe a bit more confused, but anyone who really knows me deeply and who loves me and cares about me and has seen my journey over the past few years, they'll all look at what I'm doing now. Have all looked at what I'm doing now and affirm, yeah, you're where you're meant to be. And that's great. Because I really feel like where I am now, I worried I was going to have to cut off my life before ministry. That I would have to go, okay, I'm not going to do theatre anymore. I'm not going to write anymore. I'm not going to create anymore. But actually, I get to bring all of that with me. Yes. What I do on a daily basis here is create space for people to explore the stories they tell themselves about who they are, where they've come from, and where they're going. And I was doing that in the theatre, and now I get to do it with people in the church.
Yes.
I craft spaces with lights and sound and music and word and conflict and all the things that I was doing in the theatre, and I get to do it in the church. And also, the things that were most exciting to me in my theatre career was working with in communities, working with people on the margins, people who were underrepresented and whose stories weren't being heard. And, you know, I dedicate a lot of my time now being with people on the edge, people who our society pushed to the edge and out to the center. And I get to be alongside people, know them, love them, learn from them, and experience God's love through them. And what a blessing.
Well, and it is a blessing. And one example of what you're just now sharing about the vulnerable, you just went on a pilgrimage.
Yeah, it is.
So describe that pilgrimage for us.
Yeah, so St. Martin's is very well known for its work supporting London homeless community. You know, right in the center of London, there are a number of people, far too many. You know, it's tragic how many people are discarded by society and live on our streets, you know. And we have a government that has a rhetoric that says, you know, it's a lifestyle choice. And, you know, that the idea that people might sleep in a tent is criminal and that they could be arrested for smelling too bad. You know, it is abhorrent, some of the things we hear from the our leaders in this country. And St. Martin's has always been at the center of our city. And being alongside people who are homeless. And this work started about 100 years ago with a man called Dick Shepherd, who was the vicar here. Incredible man who threw open the door to St. Martin after the First World War. And a number of men in particular at that time that were coming back from the war that didn't have a place to live, and were homeless and were being discarded by the government at that time. Found home and safety at St. Martin. And that work has continued over the past 100 years. And we have a community now called a charity called The Connection at St. Martin that does amazing work supporting, offering vital care and services to people who are homeless. And they organize an annual pilgrimage from St. Martin in the Fields in the center of London in Trafalgar Square to Canterbury Cathedral, which is the home of the Anglican Communion. It's also a famous pilgrimage. You may have heard of, you know, the Canterbury Tales, Geoffrey Chaucer's
Oh,
pilgrimage,
yes.
from London to Canterbury. And so we follow in the pilgrim's footsteps from London to Canterbury every year. It's 80 miles over 4 days. And we set off about 70 of us, who did the whole route. And I think about 120 had joined by the end of the route. Some people only 2 or 3 days. And we walked together over the night, through the night, to Canterbury, not through the night, excuse me, every day, 4 days in a row to Canterbury.
Wow. So
Right.
you mentioned a great number of people. So you said 70 began the journey from St. Martin in the Fields, and then eventually it just kept growing to about 120 along the way.
Yes.
So, but what I find interesting, something you and I shared earlier, was there was actually homeless individuals part of the pilgrimage.
Yeah. So one of my roles here at St. Martin's is I help lead what is called the Sunday International Group, which has been running for about 10 years. It's a space on a Sunday afternoon for men and women who are currently homeless and who are refugees and asylum seekers and have no access to any kind of public funding or support. And are really sort of, again, disregarded and forgotten about in our society. And so we created a space on Sundays for people to come together to share a meal together. We sometimes have creative activities there. People can have a shower, they can do their laundry, and also get access to kind of more practical needs, whether it be, okay, here's a new sleeping bag or a pair of trousers or trainers, and also sort of support, immigration support, and that sort of thing. So we have this amazing community, and 8 members of that community walked with me from London to Canterbury, and it was such an incredible time of shared mutual ministry where these guys were speaking into my life and sharing their experiences with so much joy and hope and gratitude and reflectiveness that defied any kind of expectations or prejudices you may have about people who are currently sleeping on the street. Yeah. I heard some incredible stories of resilience, of hope, of faith. A young man about my age, he came to the UK when he was 9 years old and from Yemen, and he ended up in the foster care system and was eventually found himself in a council house, in sort of supported housing, but was unprepared. So about age 18, he was living in a flat, suddenly on his own in London. He couldn't really provide for himself or pay his rent, and so he was evicted. And when he was evicted, he was homeless. And also, it was then discovered that when he came here as a 9-year-old, that he had come here illegally. You know, he didn't even know that, but he didn't have, you know, settled status here. And so he was completely cut off from the system. And he has been homeless for 10 years now, frankly, trying to get back into a country that has been his home for the past 30 years. And he's talked about it with so much kind of tashi. And he said, you know, for years I felt trapped. I felt like I wanted to be free. I hadn't put faith. I hadn't felt like I belong anywhere. And for the first time in the past 10 years, as I've walked together with my brothers, with people I didn't know before, with strangers, as we walked together with this common goal and we share this experience, this is the first time I felt free. I felt like I belong. I felt safe. And that was so incredible, so impactful. You know, he's a young man, he's Muslim. He walked with us on this pilgrimage. It wasn't about, oh, yes, we converted him into the church. It was like, no, Christ has spoken to me through you today. Because you revealed to me what the gospel looks like. You revealed to me that making people feel free, feel safe, feel like they belong, that is the work of Christ. That is the gospel of Christ. And you have ministered to me. It's not been about what I've given to you. And that's really powerful.
That's awesome. I love that story that you're sharing. And we never know, how Christ is going to work through us or how Christ is going to work through others. And ministry just doesn't stop at the church. It's out into the fields.
Yeah.
And I love that. In fact, when I was in London in January, I felt a special call. I had this overcoat. I loved this overcoat, but now I'd had it for 30 years, and it was time to change out. And so when I went to a store in London, they had a sale on overcoats, and so I bought a new overcoat. And the guy, he packed it up, and he was going to either give it to me or put it in the trash. And I said, and it was very interesting in that moment when I had encountered some individuals who were on the streets, living on the streets in London. And as you said, it's unfortunate there's so many. And I looked at the gentleman and I said, would you please give this coat to someone who is homeless? And he looked at me and he said, you want me to give this coat to someone who's homeless? He says, it's a nice coat. And I said, I don't need it anymore. They need it more than I do. Mm-hmm. And so he was so moved by that. And he said, absolutely, I will make that happen. And you know, it's that thing of making sure that we're connecting with our siblings who are on the margins and caring for them, even in the simplest of ways.
Yeah.
And sort of like, as you're saying, on the pilgrimage, it may seem like it's something that's simple, but look at its impact.
And you know, what's really key with it as well, and particularly our philosophy here at St. Martin, is that, you know, that pilgrimage was an opportunity to know one another and to experience something together. And we see our community here. Well, I talk about our Hundred International Group, but okay, those 8 guys that we went on the pilgrimage together, they are not problems to be fixed. You know? They are not people who I have all the answers and I can go fix their problems. But they are people to be known. People to be known and people to be loved. Yes. And that can be through actions and things we do. But if our starting mentality is, you are a problem, you have lacks, and I can fix you, that doesn't look like the love of God, I don't think. We might think it does, but actually we're not seeing that, after being in Christ, they have, their life as it is matters enough. Mm-hmm. You know, their life is cherished. They do not need to be fit. But that's how God sees us, I believe. God does not see us as problems to be fixed, but as people to be known and loved. Yes. And that really drives how we approach this ministry.
Well, as a young adult, and you are now moving forward into ministry wanting to be an ordained priest, what advice would you give to anyone who is young that might be interested in considering the ministry?
Pray. Pray long and hard. It's such a, a joke, but it's true. You know, I had a spiritual director who introduced me to Ignatian contemplative prayer. I don't know if you know about Ignatius of Loyola, who sort of leans into imaginative prayer, and that really spoke for me, and it really taught me how to pray, because it wasn't about, you know, before my prayer life was very much trying to get God to listen to me. I had to reframe my prayer life to be God, your servant is listening, rather than listen, God, your servant is speaking. And really open myself up to what God had faith in me. And that has come through contemplation, that's come through silence, that's come through prayer practices. It's only in doing that that I've really been able to discern in the here and now what God is calling me to do, because I believe that my deepest desires and my greatest hope truly align with God. And so taking that time not to keep searching for things outside of me and trying to add, to try and make sense of things, but to strip things away and to listen to what is deepest within me, created by God, given by God. That if I can connect and listen to that, then that'll be somewhere aligned with what God's calling me to do.
Yes. I love your description of that, because that's what happened to me when I answered my call.
Yeah.
The call was coming, and I was like, wait a minute. And I did a lot of praying. It was a full week of prayer and discernment, and before I said yes.
Yeah.
Because it's a serious moment in your life.
Yeah.
And answering that call. It's not for the weak hearted or weak minded.
Well, and in some ways, you know, I discovered through this process of discernment that the only reason I feel like that, not the only reason, but a reason I feel like I need to get ordained is because I find it too hard to be a layperson who doesn't do it, actually. You know, I have so much respect for people that, you know, have to manage their lives, their daily lives, their work and their families and these things, and they have to bring their Christianity or their faith to that world, to that faith, and negotiate how to do that. And as an ordained person, you get to be like, well, this is just me all the time. And I get to rest in the fact that I wear my faith on my sleeve, as it were.
Yeah.
And that kind of, because I'm going to find that easier. I guess to just openly live out my faith in this sphere, in the church, and for God's people. You know, we talk about prayer life. There was a moment I had in prayer where, you know, I had a bit of a spiritual experience, and I saw in front of me a walnut sort of floating almost in space. And I saw it, and God said to me, I said, what is that? And God said, it's the church. And I said, but I'm allergic to walnuts. I am. I'm allergic to nuts. I'm allergic to nuts. He said, I know, but will you love what I love? And will you care for what I care for? And I said, yes, I will. You know, there will be times where I will think I want to avoid that. There'll be times where I think, this is too difficult. This actually, it might even be a problem for me. Mm-hmm. But God loves it. And God cares for it. And God holds it in his hands. And he's called me to do the thing. And I've said, yeah, I'll do that.
That's fantastic. I love that imagery. And wow, very impactful. Thank you for sharing that, Jolly.
Thank you.
So as we come toward a close in our conversation today, and I, of course, I look forward to having another conversation with you down the line.
I hope so.
Yes. So what is, I guess, in you mentioned one a prayer book, and I'm just interested, are there any other books or experiences that significantly influenced you that you could recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. As I said, the Sticky is My Monastery by Reverend Richard Carter. Found it very powerful and really spoke to me. You know, I'm very blessed to have some great colleagues around me here. The Reverend Dr. Sam Wells is the vicar here. He used to be the chaplain at the dean of the chapel at Duke Divinity School in North Carolina. And he's a very creative, an exciting theologian, so do read his books. I love, you know, there's so many incredible people that have shaped me. You know, I love the work of Rachel Held Evans. Yes. You know, may she rest in peace. What an incredible, prophetic and inspiring voice. I love the work of Father Richard Bohr, yes. Who really speaks about contemplation and action and that link in a powerful way. Rowan Williams, former Archbishop of Canterbury, read his work. And if silence had become a really big part of my faith, my life of faith, then if that's quite new to people, there's a book called The Silent Lands, I believe, by Martin Laird. There's a short book, a full book, but introducing the kind of contemplative prayer. I think that's a really nice way in for anyone who might be interested in that as a way of spending time with God.
Well, great. Thank you for the recommendations.
Hey, you're very welcome.
Yes. Well, for our listeners, those not in London, what would you say to encourage them to visit St. Martin in the Fields?
Listen, it's one of the most beautiful churches in the country, in the world. No, it's an incredible space. It's a very welcoming space. You know, if you come in, hopefully, we really hope that you feel like this is a place where you're welcome, where you're safe, where you belong. It's a very creative place. We're not just a kind of Sunday service community. We put our cultural life and our concerts, as you mentioned, they're a table as part of our church. Our commercial life, you know, the cafe and the kind of the work that we do with Vision City is really important to us. And then our congregational and our compassionate sort of mission and ministry is really important to us. So it's a really thriving community. And we've also really been blessed by our online community that, you know, like yourself, you know, how you have the podcasts and streaming and things like that. We really been able to benefit from that coming out of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we've got a really thriving online community. So, you know, as I would always say, if you can, you know, be rooted in a local community near you, please do. But, you know, if you can't, because either that community doesn't speak to you anymore because it's too, whatever, conservative, you don't feel safe there, or maybe you're not able to leave your home because of illness, finding online communities is possible, and actually they can really thrive, and we've got a really brilliant thriving online community. So, you know, people are always welcome to visit us online too.
Yes. Well, Jolly, it has been a great pleasure to be able to spend this time with you and have another connection. It's just you're a phenomenal human being, and I feel blessed in having our paths cross just a few months ago, and look how God works in our lives, and we learn through ministry and what we are called to do, and all the ways. It's a beautiful connection, and I appreciate the time that you've spent with us, and to our listeners here. This again is Jolly Goldsnode from St. Martin in the Fields, pastoral assistant, but now going to be heading and teaching and learning about the ordained, becoming an ordained priest. And so we're very pleased and proud of you.
Thank you, Mark. It's really, I just want to say a huge thank you. And incredible. You know, it seems like such a brilliant, beautiful community that you have out there at Harmony Toluca Lake. I'm really inspired by the work that you're doing. And, you know, as I may have said earlier, the fact that you took the time to come over and speak to me and encourage me and listen and share your experiences, I found such an affinity with you. And I think it's brilliant. I'd love to come visit you at some point if I ever make it back out to Los Angeles. I will be straight down to come visit you guys. So keep doing what you're doing. It's brilliant.
You're welcome anytime. And you know, I'll be looking forward to seeing you in the next time when I'm in London. It'll be a blessing. Who knows? I may join you on the pilgrimage.
Your feet. You'd be very welcome. Yeah.
All right. All to our listeners, thank you for joining us. Like, share, download these episodes, and we continue to enjoy the Our Story segments. Again, Jolly Goldstone with me today, and I wish everyone a great day. Enjoy the week, and peace.
Thanks for listening to Our Story, the podcast. This month's guest was Jolly Goldstone, and this episode was recorded and mixed by me, Donna Miller. Be sure to like, rate, and download each episode so you never miss one. Find us on Instagram at @harmony_TLC or on Facebook at @harmonyTL. Join us next month for a conversation with Sandy Lee. And as Pastor Mark always likes to say, peace.